episode is brought to you in part by ReviewFix.com. Because even though Patrick Hickey didn't tell me I could do this, I'm doing it anyway because I'm talking to him for this episode, so it just makes perfect sense. Head on over to ReviewFix.com, your one stop for music, game, film, comics, and pro wrestling news and reviews. Oh, wait, no, your other stop, because you could also go here.
I'm Stephen John Drew from the official GunnaGeek.com show, a weekly geek news podcast that is a part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other awesome geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics, where once again, we are just ignoring the whole video game comic thing, and instead, I'm talking to Patrick Hickey Jr. again about another one of his wonderful books. Patrick, how are you today?
I'm doing great, man. Thank you so much for having me again. I feel blessed to be in your presence once again.
Well, this is round three for you, if I can do my math correctly.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And you're not sick of me yet, which is great.
Oh, it'll take a while for me to get sick of you. Even Carrington got like 6 episodes. Why do you think he hasn't been back?
Okay, so now I don't feel good. Why hasn't he been back?
Because I got sick of him. No, I don't know. It's just one of those things.
Okay, all right. I'm going to tell him. I got you.
Oh, I'm going to leave this in here, so he'll hear it anyway.
I'll isolate the clip and I'll just send it to him and I'll have it like loop over because I'm sick of him. We'll put like a dubstep behind it, like some Korean pop.
I love how you say that like you don't think I'm actually going to do it.
No, I know you'll do it. If I know anything about you and your sense of humor and the groups that you're in on Facebook, yeah, you'll definitely do it. So I'm not worried about that at all.
So we're not here to dump on our friend, though. We're here to talk about the minds behind shooter games, which a lot of people might find kind of weird because I just couldn't ever really get into shooters.
Same here. It's like in the introduction of the book, I'm just like, this was probably the book that I didn't want to write. This is probably the book that I enjoyed writing the least in the beginning. But then something totally strange happened. I had like 3 or 4 amazing developers that I've worked with in the past. One being Eric Holmes, who worked on Hulk Ultimate Destruction, which is an amazing comic book video game. He was like, so you're working on a shooter book, huh? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, well, have you spoken to Lee? And I'm like, Lee Perry? Like, the level designer on Gears of War 1, 2, and 3? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, no. He goes, do you want to talk to him? And I'm like, yeah. So I'm like, oh my god, I just got Gears of War in the book. And then Jake Simpson, who's worked on Revolution X, he's worked on NBA Jam, he's worked on The Sims, he's like, you're doing a shooter book, I gotta talk to you about Soldier of Fortune. And I'm like, that game was like the goriest like shooter I've ever played. I'm like, seriously? He's like, yeah. He goes, send me whatever you want, and I'll answer it. And I'm like, so all of a sudden, I started getting names that I wasn't getting in my other books. So we have, like, Frank O'Connor, the guy that wrote the story for Halo 3. We have Tony Giovannini, who worked on Metroid Prime. We've got Dylan Cuthbert, the creator of Star Fox. I mean, this book is so stacked. Rebecca Heineman, who was the programmer on like 4 different versions of Wolfenstein 3D. Tony Barnes, who worked on Jungle Strike, who worked on Urban Strike, who worked on Desert Strike, who worked on Medal of Honor. I mean, every time I do a chapter in these books, I have to play the game, replay the game. Shooters are my least favorite genre. They're up there. Like, strategy games, really not so much for me either. If I was like stuck on a desert island, I'd probably go with like NHL 94, Pokemon Red, and Fallout 3. But I like Fallout 3, like, with a melee weapon. Like, I actually own the sledgehammer, the super sledgehammer, because I like running around the wasteland with the sledgehammer, just, like, bopping people off the head, not so much, like, the sniper rifle and stuff. So I'm not really a shooter guy. But then something happened playing through all of these games. I was just like, damn, this genre is so much deeper than people give it credit for. So it's just like, I remember, I always liked Gears of War, but I always thought it was like unforgivingly hard at times. And then talking to the level designer, he's just like, he's like, use the cover system. He's like, cover, and he's just like, look around. He's like, the game is really pretty. He's like, take in the atmosphere. And I did, and I'm just like, if Gears of War was like an 8 to me before, it was like a 10 by the time I was done. Because I got to speak to the developer and find out the way that I should play it, you know? So just like, speaking to all of these developers, I have an uncanny appreciation for the shooter genre now. And it being 39 games, it's the biggest book that I've done so far. So it was just like, people were coming out of the woodwork, and so many developers were vouching for me. This just kind of like felt like the book where the stars really aligned, and it's always hard to get developers, super hard to get developers, but this was the one where it was just like, wow, everything really came together in such a beautiful way. So it's like, I'm super proud of this book. This is the biggest, baddest book that I've done so far.
So it sounds like this is definitely not a book you could have written as the first or second in the series at all.
No. It's just because, I have Taylor Kurosaki, who was the narrative director for the last Call of Duty, the Modern Warfare remake. And when the first book came out, I had a relationship with Activision before, and I've reviewed Call of Duty games before for Examiner, and I've written articles about them for NBC and stuff, but I don't think they would have given me somebody that high up the food chain to speak to. And I feel like telling them at that time that I had two books out, a third on the way, and this was the fourth, I felt like it lent a lot to my credibility. It definitely helped. So yeah, just, this was probably some of the sources that I got in this book I definitely don't think I would have been able to get earlier. And I mean, it goes the same thing for, I mean, my fifth book is the minds behind the Sega Genesis games. That's coming out like at the end of this year. And then the sixth book is the minds behind the Sony PlayStation games. And that's going to be coming out like early 2022. Both of those books are finished already. And the sources for my fifth and sixth book are off the charts insane too. So it's just like, it just keeps getting better and better, you know? So just like, I tell people this all the time, and I don't say it because I want them to buy all of my books, but there's definitely like a growing process. I'm super proud of like the first book, super proud of the second book, but it's just like, it just keeps getting, like, the experience for me keeps getting better. I feel like the writing's getting better, the reporting's getting better, and I'm getting better sources. It's like, I'm getting, like, when somebody goes, oh, did you get this game? I go, mm-hmm, yes, I did. You know, so it just feels a lot, better.
Do you see yourself going back and redoing any of the earlier ones now that you've got this extra credibility?
It's funny that you said that. I don't see myself like going back and redoing anything. So I'll give you guys like a sneak peek. So right now I'm working on my seventh book, The Minds Behind the Sony PlayStation 2 Games. I haven't told anybody that, so it's exclusive to you. I've already got 38 developers signed up. But one of the developers that I'm speaking to worked on the original Spider-Man game on the PlayStation 2. So if you guys are familiar with my work, you know that I interviewed the programmer for the first book of that game. So it was a good chapter. I was proud of it. He talked about how he designed the web slinging function in the game, like how Spider-Man web slings. He programmed it, you know? So I ended up getting the lead designer for the game, and he's going to talk in the PlayStation 2 book, and he's going to kind of like add more to the story that Jamie couldn't in the first book. So maybe one day I do a Minds Behind the Game's Greatest Hits, where I kind of go back and add more information. Who knows? But I just feel like I've created a brand for myself where, I mean, I've written, I'm gonna, by the end of this year, I will have written 7 books in like 5 years. And I mean, it's a lot. I mean, we're talking like 120,000 words a book. We're talking like 800,000 words just on video game history. And there's definitely room to do more. I would definitely love to do a compendium of some sort, or like a greatest hits where I just like pick my favorite chapters from each book, like a must own, like a like the book, you know? But I'm definitely not gonna stop doing them. I might stop how quickly I do them, because I've got a lot of other stuff going on right now with another son, with another child, and some things that we'll talk about later in the podcast, like some other career stuff. So yeah, and also you don't want to like flood the market with your own stuff, you know? So just like I have people that'll go, oh, I'm gonna buy the fourth book, but I haven't finished the second one yet, and I bought the third already. So you know, you never want to put people in that situation. You want people to like kind of hunger for your stuff. And I thought a book a year wasn't that much, but it's just like I'm looking at some of the other people that do this, some of the other video game authors, and they're banging out like a book every 3 years. So it's like I don't have to work nearly as hard as I am, if that makes sense.
Oh, it definitely does. Maybe you should take some of that hard workingness and give it to me so I can get some things written.
I'm telling you, 500 words a day, that's what I aim for, at least. You know, every day, by hook or crook, at least 500 words. And it doesn't sound like a lot, but if you do it, you will make magic happen. I'm telling you.
What do you think you were able to bring to this book that somebody who is really into plane shooters couldn't?
I feel like if I was super into shooters, I might be a little bit more fanboyish. I try not to play favorites with any of these games. I try and let the developers be the ones that like add the emotion. I use my words to create context, talk about the impact the game had on the industry, how many copies it sold. Like, I do all the research, and I feel like that has to be not dry, but that has to be as like straight and factually solid as possible. Because if it isn't, and if it's just like, oh, I love this game, blah, 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 and it's like, if I'm telling you that I love this game, why do you even care what the developer has to say? You know? So I feel like if you just come across and you're just like, Gears of War sold, you know, 5 million units. Its Metacritic score is this. It impacted the shooter genre because it focused on evading enemies rather than just shooting them. It's multiplayer, blah, blah, blah. So it's just like by me setting the scene and telling the reader like the background information that they need, it makes the quotes from the developer mean more. So the less attached I am to the game, usually the better the chapter.
Oh yeah, you're not going in there with the agenda or anything, or the bias. Mm-hmm. So makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah. So it's like I've written chapters on like the NHL games, and I mean I just love hockey games, and it's like you can tell. And that's not to say those chapters are terrible. I don't think they are, but I feel like some of the best chapters I've ever written, like games like Night Trap, that I had like no attachment to, people read that and they're like, I love that game so much now, like thank you so much. And I'm just like, I didn't do anything. You fell in love with the game because the developers like really loved working on that game. That's what, you know. And that's the thing, like as a journalist, you want to be as selfless as possible and give the people that you're quoting, people that you're interviewing, the room that they need to express themselves freely. If you do that, then you can create a solid like piece of writing. So that's what a lot of game writers don't understand. That they think it's all about like their opinions. Like every time I post a game on Instagram, I'll have some like would, you know, wannabe reviewer or critic or somebody that actually does review games. They're like, oh, I reviewed that game last week, it's trash. And I'm like, you see what you just did? You just killed the conversation before we were even able to have one. If you think the game is trash, that's fine, but that's not what I do. If the game is bad, that doesn't affect me being able to tell the game story. That's not what I care about. I care about like what the developer had to do to make said trash. You know? Because what you might find out is this person may have like lost a loved one in the middle of the development cycle, or something might have happened to them, or you know, the publisher, you know, didn't pay them, so they stopped developing like a part of the game that would have made it awesome. Like all of that information to me is just as important as you saying the game is trash. You know, some people understand it, and those are the people that love my books, and then some people don't understand that, and then they can't fathom spending $40 on a book that isn't about the opinion of the games. You know? It's interesting.
I mean, I can't fathom spending $40 on a book that's just, I love this game so much, for, you know, 128 pages.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, tons of people write books like that, and tons of people buy them too. But, and I don't think that, I don't have anything against those things. It's just, that's not my style. That's not my bag. That's not what I do, you know? So,
it's like a $5.
For the people that want to read that stuff. Yeah, absolutely. You know, because at the end of the day, I mean, I have over 3,000 games on 30 consoles, and I'm telling you this right now, my opinion means just as much as my 4-year-old daughter after she plays Minecraft for the first time. Our opinions don't necessarily mean anything, you know? It's like, I want to hear from the people that created the art, you know? So, that's just me.
How did you come up with the list for this book, seeing as how you couldn't even go into this with, these are ones I heard about growing up and played a lot?
So, it was just kind of, I'm just opening up the list of, games here. This way we can have a better conversation. At first it's kind of like, what games defined the genre? So obviously, like, Wolfenstein 3D. Obviously, I did a Doom chapter in the first book, so I'm like, I don't want to necessarily do Doom again, but, like, this is the thing, too. Shooters aren't just first-person shooters. You've got third-person shooters. You've got space shooters. So you've got light gun shooters. So you've got a rich history of games. So, like, I definitely wanted to get something that was infamous. So that's why I got Chiller. If you've never played Chiller, Chris, you've got to play it. It is ridiculous. It ended up, like, basically getting banned in the United States. I spoke to the developer. He's probably one of the smartest people I've ever met in my entire life, and he was just like, yeah, he's like, that game was interesting. You know, he was just like, we knew exactly what we were doing, but we were trying to cause, like, a ruckus in the marketplace, and he's like, that's exactly what we caused. So you've got arcade shooters, you've got first-person shooters, you've got third-person shooters, you've got space shooters, so it's like, I tried to get as many of those different types of games as possible. So obviously, you want games that sell well, you want games that people have fond memories of. I definitely love having cult games in there, I love having influential games, so that's what I do. I make a list of, like, not the games that I want, but the types of games that I want. So that's how I got, like, Sinistar, that's how I got, like, Halo 3, Area 51, Star Fox. But then there's definitely games that I liked that people will be like, why is this in there? Like South Park on Nintendo 64, and The Suffering Ties That Bind, and trying to think of what else. Scarface on PS2, Dementium 2 on the Nintendo DS, like a first-person shooter on the Nintendo DS. There's not that many of them. Lone Wolf, which is like a really sexy sniper shooting game on the iPhone, which there are a ton of crappy ones, but this is a really good one. Star Wars Shadows of the Empire, which I think is one of my favorite Star Wars games of all time. So that's kind of like what I did. I was just trying to check off as many different boxes as possible. Also, too, one of my things is every book that I do, I'd love to get at least one Rockstar game in there, because that publisher, to me, is awesome. I love their work. So for this one, I got Red Dead Revolver, which to me is probably, like, the game in the series that there's the most shooting in. That game is super heavy on the shooting. And I spoke to one of the lead level designers, and he just gave me, like, this amazing story about how the game started off as a Capcom game, and then Capcom basically sold it to Rockstar for, like, $1, and Rockstar turned the game into, like, what it is today. So, again, to answer your question as short as possible, come up with the types of games that I want, and then I just do some deep Google searches, some deep LinkedIn searches, deep mobile game searches, and I start looking for developers. And then I start pitching them, start arranging interviews, and then just start trying to make stuff happen. So that's basically what I do. That's what I did here.
What's the hardest you've worked to get an interview so far?
There's been times where I've had to do phone calls with people at like 3 o'clock in the morning, in my kitchen where I am right now. There have been times where I've had to travel a couple of hours to do interviews. There are times where I've had to speak to developers through email only, sending hundreds of emails back and forth to get them to get the answers that I need. There are times that I've had to bitch to other developers to get the developers that I needed to sign the paperwork needed to have them in the book. Most of the time though, I would say like 85% of the time, the developer is so cool and so forthcoming and so ready to like tell the story that it's easy. It just comes down to me having to be prepared. And I'm lucky that every time I've done an interview so far, I've been prepared. The person never feels that I'm wasting their time. The developer doesn't feel like what I'm gonna write is gonna be shit, because I tell them flat out, I'm gonna send it to you after. I want you to be proud of it. Like, I was having a conversation with a young comic book writer like a couple of days ago, and I was just telling them about the language that they use in their comic, and I was just like, sometimes less is more. You want to be able to communicate with people of all shapes and sizes, and sometimes just using a big word for the sake of using a big word makes you feel good, but it makes the reader feel like shit. And you shouldn't do that. You should be selfless, and you should sacrifice. And I feel like when you're interviewing video game developers, the more you know about the game, the more that you've sacrificed, like the more hours you've put into their game, the more you've read about their game, the more you're going to get back out of them. If they feel like you don't understand what their game is about, what they're trying to accomplish, then they're not going to give you what you want. You're going to get really like short answers and stuff like that. So I always try and make sure that every developer knows that I'm going to spend a serious amount of time crafting questions, then I'm going to spend a serious amount of time writing, and then I'm going to send it to them, and I'm going to be transparent. And the point of the story to the young comic book writer was, my 12-year-old nephew can read any of my books and understand them. And then at the same time, all three of my books that are available now are all in Harvard's library. They're in like 5 Ivy League college libraries. So people with master's degrees and doctorates read them too. That's what you want when you write. You want to try and connect with as many different people and let as many different people have their own opinions about your work. And I think video game developers want to do the same thing. Like, a 10-year-old could play Minecraft and just like run around and kill shit and have fun. But like for me, if I play Minecraft, I don't even want to play the main story. I just want to create. I want to build shit. I want to dig as far down into the map as I possibly can. You know, like I want to do all sorts of crazy shit. So it's just like video game development, writing, it's very similar. It's creating something that could be appreciated by the masses. And I think like the developers they understand like what I'm trying to do, and it's to preserve like their legacy, and for some just to show that they do have a legacy. Like I've interviewed so many developers that are just like, why do you want to interview me for? And then I have to explain to them, like, your game sold like 4 million copies. You know how many childhoods you influenced? No way. And I'm like, yes, way. To the point where, like, I've had to, like, screenshot, like, conversations between me and my friends where I'm just like, oh, I just got an interview with this guy. And they're like, holy shit, I love that game. And I'll send it to the developer. And they're like, wow, really? People still feel that way about the game? And I'm like, yes. So, again, to answer your question, everyone is different. Every person is different. But yeah, I mean, most of the time it's just like we're talking like to get a chapter done. We're talking hours on the interview, then a couple of hours writing it, then a couple of hours editing it. And then I got to find the right screenshots and the right pictures for the book. And then it gets edited again. It's just like it's so much work that goes into this. Even the easy ones are time intensive, but I'm telling you, it's such a good feeling when you get like your prints and the book is going to come out in a couple of weeks and you're reading through it one more time and you see like all the pictures you picked and they're all in the book and everything looks the way that it's supposed to. You're just like, yeah, this was totally worth it. So I mean, there's been some times where I've had a couple of developers like hold me up because they all have to sign a waiver, like a release from my publisher, and I had one that just, she did not want to sign it for some reason. She just like kept dodging me, and I sent her the chapter, and it was just crazy. And then I had another developer that's just like amazing, and I was bitching to him in confidence, and he was just like, yeah, he's like, I'm sick of you talking about this. And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, just wait. And like 15 minutes goes by, and then I get an email and the waiver's in there, and I'm just like, wow. I'm like, what did you do? He's like, don't worry about it. I'm like, one day, I'm like, we're gonna go have a steak and a drink, and you're gonna tell me what you said to her. And he's like, okay. So that's probably been like my worst experience, and that's been the one that's like kind of taken the longest, because I was kind of like, if I don't get this game in this book, I'm gonna be really pissed. And it ended up getting in, so worked out good.
So which cut of steak would you get, and how would you have them cook it?
I would probably get like a T-bone, and it would be medium rare.
That's a good choice.
So yeah, so it's just like, if like I tell my wife all the time, joking around, my wife doesn't like to make steak because like she feels like she overcooks it and stuff like that. So it's just like, whenever I have a steak, I make it. And it's just like, if you're just gonna cook the shit out of it, then it's just like, what's the point? You know, it's like, it's gotta be bloody, it's gotta be pink in the middle, you know? So yeah, that's what I would do. Get a T-bone. No, I want one. So I ate enough today, though. I had cheesecake, I had all sorts of good stuff today.
Well, peek behind the curtain, it's 9:30, so you probably should have eaten it already if you're going to today.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. Like, I don't like to eat after 6, period. So, and then I went for a nice, like, 10K step walk after dinner. So that kind of, like, washed away the cheesecake. So I'm good. I'll probably just have some water later, and I'm good to go.
So I didn't think it was possible, but you have me super excited about reading a book about shooters now. I mean, I was going to read it anyway because it's you, and I know it's going to be good stuff, but I didn't think I'd be that excited about it.
Thank you. It's the best one that I've done so far, just because, like, I mean, some of the stories in this book are just insane. When you think about, like, the pressure that, like, some of these guys were under, like, the team that did Halo 3, I mean, like, if Halo 3 isn't, like, a monster success, like, the Xbox 360, like, kind of dies in a way. That was, like, the one, like, killer, like, first-party game that they had, you know? And they learned so many lessons from, like, Halo 1 and 2, and the 360's hardware was so much better. So it's like, Halo 3 had to sell, like, millions upon millions of copies. And it did, you know? And then it's just like, Gears of War is just like this amazing game, and it sold like 5 million copies. But it's just like, to me, Gears of War is just as good as Halo 3, but how does Halo 3 sell twice as many copies? You know, it's like crazy. And the thing that's really cool about Gears of War is the level designer on Gears of War 1, 2, and 3 is actually like one of the founding fathers of Fortnite. And he used to use this program called Kismet to basically build levels in Gears of War, like on the fly, you know? And he was just like, well, this would be pretty cool if you could like actually do this in a game. And that's like the seed from which Fortnite was born. So it's just like, getting him to tell me that story was freaking awesome. And then also too, I mean, to speak to the narrative director for Call of Duty Modern Warfare and find out all about, like, you know, because there's like a strong female like co-lead in that game, and that's just like a really different game. Like, so many great people opened up to me for this. And then to have 39 games, I mean, the biggest book I've done so far. So it's just like, the stories are really good in this. Also too, this is a special book because, I mean, I got a Nintendo first party game. It's the first book that I've gotten, like a first party, like Metroid. Never thought, like, I've been trying to get like a first party Nintendo game in one of my books from the beginning, and it's just like, Nintendo has gone so far to send me 35 page PDFs on like Pokemon and Mario Kart and just give me every fact that I could ever want about these series, but they wouldn't give me an interview with somebody. And I told them, I'm like, I need to speak to somebody. So I ended up getting Tony Giovannini because he's not in the video game industry anymore. And he worked a lot on Metroid Prime. So he was the kind of the reason why Samus turns into a ball, like in the first level of Metroid Prime. Like, he was the guy that was just like, you know, you should have her turn into a ball in the first level. Like, people would probably dig that, like in the tutorial, to see her do that. And Miyamoto was like, whoa, good idea. So just like every time I play Metroid Prime and I play in the beginning and I turn into the bowl, I'm like, Tony had a good idea, you know? So if you read this book and you don't like shooter games, you will end up appreciating the genre. If you love shooter games, you will fall head over heels with some gems that you've never played before, because like, we're talking, I've got games from on the PC, the Atari 2600, Super Nintendo, 3DO, PlayStation 4, Xbox 360, I mean, Xbox. So, I mean, it's great now because, I mean, like I said, I finished the 5th and 6th book. I'm working on the 7th book now. So it's like I go into the video game store and I just look and I'm just like, I interviewed that developer, I interviewed that developer, I interviewed that developer, I interviewed that developer. So it's great. It's a great feeling. But the thing is now, I mean, you know this, there's just so many shooter games out there. Like, the shooter genre, it's like shooters and sports, you know? And now that I've done a sports book and a shooter book, I just feel like I've kind of come full circle. And that's why, after the shooter book was over, I had people go to me, you should do a Minds Behind the survival horror games, or you should do a Minds Behind the fighting games, or you should do a Minds Behind the, you know, whatever. And I was just like, I think I've done enough genres now. Like, sports, adventure, shooters. I'm like, I want to jump to a console. And that's why I jumped to the Genesis, and then the PlayStation, and then the PlayStation 2. But, I mean, to end, like, this like, leg of the Minds Behind the Games journey with shooters, and the way I did it, I'm super happy with. So, if you're excited, then I'm excited. But I'm telling you, there's going to be some chapters in here where you're just like, I don't think... this is nowhere online. This isn't in a Reddit forum anywhere. Like, I'm reading about this for the first time. Like, if you read the Star Fox chapter, you're gonna find out, like, Miyamoto's favorite snacks. You know? Because, like, while he was working on, like, Star Fox with Dylan Cuthbert, who was, like, a kid at the time, they used to go to McDonald's late at night. You know? Like, cool little stories like that. But then also stories about how the characters were named in Star Fox. All sorts of cool shit like that. So, I can't wait for people to get their hands on this. And it's literally, like, I sent in my proofs, like, 2 weeks ago. So, like, the book could be, like, in a box on the way to me, like, right now. It's, like, any day now this book's gonna come out. So, I am beyond stoked.
I almost wish we were doing this during the day so I could knock on the door and have you think it's somebody knocking on your door.
Oh, that would suck. You'd get me all hyped up.
You're right. That would be mean. I wouldn't do that.
You probably have my dog go apeshit, and then my kids would wake up, and then my wife would turn green and start speaking in the third person, and she's scary. I'm 6'4", 250 pounds, and she scares the crap out of me. Like, she is one tough bookie, so.
Well, now I'm scared of her. I don't want to do it anymore. So, a little birdie tells me you have something else that you've been writing.
Well, what are you talking about? What birdie? What is this that you're talking about? Okay. So we'll let the cat out of the bag. So anyone that follows me on Instagram at Patrick Hickey Jr. or on Facebook knows that last week I unveiled that I had gotten a comic book series published by Lesser Known Comics. They're this super sexy brand new comic book company. Named Condry. The name of the series is Condry. And this is a comic that I wrote when I was like 18 years old. I'm 37 now. So just like for 19 years, I've kind of just had these files on my computer. And I've probably over the last like close to 20 years let like 15 people read it. And like every person was just like, you need to get this published. You need to find an artist and you need to get this published. And in like October of 2019, I found an artist. I'd been through a couple of artists before, but they had either not been up to the standard that I had liked, or they just worked too goddamn slow, and comics, you gotta be great and you've got to be fast, you know, like Jim Lee, you know, like every month he's cracking out like his 24 pages, like there's no rest, you know. And I had somebody that was great, but it was just like just taking way too long. So I found this amazing man, Kieran Quinn, amazing rock star artist, and I shared the story with him. And what we did was we produced like a 6-page like issue zero that we could kind of send to comic book companies as like a pitch. And then COVID happened, and basically the word that I was getting from comic book companies was, it looks good, we're interested in it, we're interested in the narrative, we're interested in the art, but because of COVID, we're not really biting on first-time comic book writers and first-time artists. Meaning, like, if you had a series that was out already and we knew that we could make money off of you, we'd probably publish it. But, you know, we don't know who you are. We don't know how marketable you are. We're not going to take a risk on you. So it's kind of like, yeah. So then, like, a month and a half ago, I meet the CEO of Lesser Known. We have a really good conversation, and this is me as a journalist. I interview him for my site. Interview does really good traffic. And then after it was over, I was just kind of like, are you guys looking for submissions? And he's like, well, if you've got something, you know. I don't think that he was expecting us to send him something finished, because we had like a finished mini issue, you know, that had been lettered, colored, inked, the whole nine yards. Like, it was ready to go. And he saw it, and we talked. Now we're a part of the Lesser Known Comics cartel, so to speak, and we're super excited. We're going to be in like their first batch of mini comics. They're going to be going to crowdfunding soon as well. It's just a really great atmosphere. It's totally like creative first. I've only been there for like 2 weeks, and I haven't felt like so motivated to produce in a very long time. It's just like when I was at like NBC and some of the magazines that I've worked on in the past, it was just kind of like, what's next? What's next? What's next? It was just like, you had no time to kind of sit back and appreciate the work that you did, and positive reinforcement was very rare. You know, it was just like, oh, you interviewed Channing Tatum last week? That's great. What are you doing today? What are you doing today? And here it's just kind of like, your character is super cool. Make dope shit. Like, if I had to say, like, if there was a motto for the company, it would just be like, just make something dope. Make something that you're proud of. Make something that has some substance to it. Make something that makes people feel, you know? So it's just like, there's some really cool characters, and it's just like, I'm really happy to not only be creating this character for this brand, but I'm super happy to be a part of this brand. So, if you want to know more about the character, I can tell you. So it's up to you.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, what's your elevator pitch to get people to read Conjury?
So it's like, imagine if Frank Miller wrote Deadpool and Deadpool was homeless. That's,
I mean,
basically,
you had me
the
at the first Deadpool, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's like, imagine if there's a man that is immensely powerful and can take like a tremendous beating and just keep coming at you, but doesn't even have a home, that has just been kind of like thrown away by society and will do anything that he has to do to survive. That he's not scared to kill. That he has killed, and he will kill, and he knows who's responsible for the reason why his life is the way that it is, and every day is like him taking another step towards his revenge, but the powers that be that have affected his life are so powerful and so entrenched in our society that it's just like, he can't just like go up to the guy and kill him. Like, it's just like, this has to be like his life's work to totally like dismantle this machine that is like responsible for his life being the shit show that it is, you know? So he's just like a really tough son of a bitch that has just been through so much, and he's been through so much that like he doesn't understand like small things like love, like respect, formalities, you know, bureaucracy, like things that you shouldn't say to people, you know, like he's definitely a character, but he's insanely powerful and doesn't know it. So it's kind of like every issue he's confronted with like something else that he didn't know about himself, you know? So it's just like he gets emotionally like more put together as each issue goes on, but he also realizes that he could take a lot more than he's taken so far, and he's taken such a like such an emotional beating. So the thing is, it's like super noir. Like, there's definitely some elements of, like, Sam and Twitch in there. Like, that early Brian Michael Bendis, like, crime noir. There's a lot of, like, Frank Miller and Daredevil in there. Because, I mean, if you like Daredevil, you like characters that totally get their ass kicked. Because, like, Daredevil gets fucked up. But he always comes back, you know? So it's like, if you like great fight scenes, if you like a good detective story, and if you like coming of age stories, then it's definitely going to be for you. So I can't wait for people to like get a hold of this. And the thing is too, it's like the writing style is super different from what I've been known for. So for like 15 years, I've been writing video game reviews, interviews, features and things like that. Like this is like one of my first forays into fiction, and it's dark and it's mean and it's angry at times, but there's some funny parts in there too. But it's just like I'm just really looking forward to people seeing this side of me. And I mean, Kieran is the best artist that I've ever seen in my entire life, like personally. Like obviously, like I've seen amazing art over the 30 years that I've been reading comics, but like to like be the first person to see some of the stuff that he's done, I just feel like incredibly blessed. And it's like I was telling him yesterday, I was just like, I wrote like the first issue and I sent it to him, and to see it come alive, I'm like, dude, it's like we Vulcan mind melded. You saw it like exactly the way that like I wanted it to be. And he's just like, okay. Like he's just super laid back and chill. So like I love the creative synergy that the both of us have. So again, if you like characters like the Punisher, Deadpool, you know, Daredevil, you're definitely gonna have a soft spot for Condry. If you're not a comic book fan, but you like TV shows like Law and Order, where there's like some detective work going on and stuff, you'll definitely like it. There's just something about the character too. Like he's so different, but he's so relatable at the same time, because we've always felt like every one of us has always felt like maybe we don't fit in the way that we thought that we did, but we try and fight it and we try and fake it. Like we fake it till we make it. And the cool thing about Condry is there's like not an ounce of fake in him. He doesn't know how. So it's like he'll walk into a room and people will laugh at him and he goes, oh, just go ahead. Get it out of your system. Just laugh. And then when you're done laughing, then he either says what he needs to say or you die. You know? So just like there's that part of him that I think a lot of us would either like relate to or really like. It's like, why do so many people in the 90s love Stone Cold Steve Austin? Because how many people get to like kick their boss in the balls and then drink a beer over him? We'd never do it in real life. But we still love Steve Austin. So there's like, Condry is that type of character. So I'm really happy to finally have an opportunity close to 20 years to like share it with as many people as possible.
So where am I going to be able to get my hands on this one?
Okay. So if you go to lesserknowncomics.com, Their site is up now, but it's being worked on at the moment. Probably in a couple of weeks, you'll be able to download a digital version of it. And then also later in the year, probably like beginning of April, they will have print versions of the comic too. So, and I just want to say, it's not just me. There's going to be a bunch of other series from lesser known comics. They're trying to build a universe. So I love Condry. It's my baby. I'm super proud of it. But they've got some really other cool, they've got some amazing artists. They got some really cool stories going on there. So they're on Instagram, and their Instagram is awesome. They're working on a comic now that's just like black, white, and pink. Like hot pink. Like that's the color palette. You know? So it's like they're trying to do really cool stuff. So if you're interested in Condry, and if you're interested in some of the other stuff that I've discussed, I would go to lesserknowncomics.com or at their Instagram, lesserknowncomics. So you definitely will not be disappointed by the stuff that they're working on.
Which, when I pull that up now, it's a landing page, and hey, it's coming soon. So mm-hmm. Hopefully when this comes out, it's a site that people can actually go to and see things. But until then, bookmark mm-hmm. it.
And if you scroll down, they've got the, what's it called? The Instagram page, and they've got they've got several Condry pictures on there. So like you could see the guy with like the knife and the glove, that's from Condry, and the guy running, that's from Condry too. So like we've only been technically affiliated with them for a couple of weeks, and they've done nothing but support the hell out of us and get us to more people. So Kieran and I are super proud to be like waving, the LKC flag and to be a part of this, like at such an early part of their, their existence. Like we want to help them build and become like a really cool company that people are interested in.
How long do you think you would have been sitting on this one if you hadn't have happened to be talking to the right person over there?
I don't know. It's like I was talking to a friend today that read it like 11 years ago, and he was just like, "How do you feel?" And I'm like, "I still can't believe it. Like, I still literally can't believe that, like, the first thing that I wrote that I really, like, gave a shit about, that I really, like, was proud of, is gonna be published for anybody to see." You know, it's just like, I feel like it's just like a piece of my heart, a piece of like my soul, a big representation of the person that I was at the time, is there for everyone to see. And the thing is though too, like the stakes are super high, because if people are like, "Oh, well, this sucks," then I'm gonna go, "Okay, I'm happy that I became a journalism professor and decided to write, nonfiction," but I mean, I really think this character is going to resonate with people. And the thing is too, it takes place in New York City, and if you live in New York City now, like New York City is a complete disaster, like gun violence, it's filthy, and somebody really needs to like come into New York City and just clean this place up. And I mean, even though I wrote it 17 years ago, that's exactly what this character's objective is. Like, he not only wants, like, revenge for, like, what these people did to him, but, like, he wants to be able to walk around and not feel in danger. It's like trouble just constantly finds him. He can't walk down the street without somebody trying to mug him or pick on him or say something stupid, and it's just like, I feel that way all the time. I walk around, and sometimes I'll be walking around with my daughter, and somebody will be like on like one of those like little motorized scooters flying like 30 miles an hour down the sidewalk, and I have to pick up my daughter and hold her, and I'm just like, man, I would love to just stick my arm out and just clothesline that guy, but I can't, because I'm a dad, and because I'm a college professor, and because I'm a husband, and because I'm a law-abiding citizen that's never spent time in jail, and I like to keep it that way. But wouldn't it be nice if there was somebody out there that did want to clean up the streets and didn't have to answer to anybody, So it's like, that's why, like, again, I think a lot of people are going to relate to this character. It's funny, because it was written, like, you know, 17 years ago, 18 years ago, but it's more powerful now than it was when I first wrote it. So
20 years ago, back in the 80s, because that's how time works.
I know, right?
I don't know which one of these I'm more excited to read, so I think I'm gonna have to get both and see from there.
You could probably read Condry in like 5 minutes, but see, because the thing is, like, it's only going to be like 10 pages. The first issue zero is, it's basically a mini comic. It's 10 pages. It gives you like a bite-sized like snack into the larger series, like once we get that going. But the art, you're gonna stop and you're gonna look around the page and you're gonna see stuff the first time and you're gonna love it, and then you're gonna look around the second time and you're gonna see something else, and then you're gonna read the words again and you're gonna go, eh? Wow. You know, so that's the thing. It's like, I've probably read Condry Zero like 100 times, and I just keep finding stuff. It's like almost like, it's like Sin City meets like Where's Waldo. There's so many things like inside those panels. And it's just, I think it's because like I grew up reading like James Cain and Agatha Christie and Frank Miller and Neil Gaiman and Alan Moore and Brian Bendis and all these people where they say super profound things in as little space as possible, and then they tag team with these amazing artists. It's like, I love The Watchmen. The Watchmen is beautifully written. I mean, Alan Moore is a genius, but without Dave Gibbons bringing those characters to life, does The Watchmen have the legacy that it has? I don't know. But it's like, I don't want anybody else to draw those characters, I'll tell you that much. You know, so I feel like I'm definitely in a tag team that I have a ton of respect for. So, and I'm really interested to see like where we can take this. So, super excited.
Well, thank you for once again taking money straight out of my wallet and into yours.
Awesome. It's gonna be fun, I'm telling you, I promise you. And like I said, if you like this LKC, they've got a ton of other like crazy stuff going on. Like one of their other protagonists is a rocker like vampire that like solves mysteries and stuff like that, and she's super cool. There's another series that like follows like a ska band. Really, like, oh my god, like they've got so many cool things going on. So it's like, I would love for Condry to be the series that people go, oh, this is really cool, but what's this LKC thing in the upper left hand corner? What's this brand about? Oh, let me get it into them. You know, like, that's what I want. I want my comic to obviously grow, but I want this brand to grow as well, because like I have a ton of faith and respect for the people that are working on their series for these guys, because I mean, it's a really cool working environment, and definitely fostered by passion and creativity. So I mean, like I said, again, I've worked for some places before that just felt like creative sweatshops, you know, and already like in the last 2 weeks or so, I've had to be stopped and just been like, you're doing a great job, like, you don't need to do it as fast, because like journalism is just like, you know, and a couple of times they've told me like, hey, you didn't have to do it today, you know, like you could chill out a little bit, like you don't have to be, I'm like, nope, so it's a great place to work, it's great people, so I'm happy that this is the company that's publishing like my baby in a way, you know.
Maybe this is more a question for them than you, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Am I going to be able to get this in my shop?
Mm-hmm. Yes, you absolutely will be. What I will say to that is that once the site is finished, you will be able to get that comic in your comic book shop. It will be possible. Absolutely.
Yeah, they're already used to getting weird things for me anyway, so that's nothing new. There's so many
cool things going on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm telling. So it's you'll be able to get this, like, where you need to get it, when you need to get it. So I promise you.
Well, good, because I don't want to have to go hunt you down. That's a multiple days drive for me to find you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I promise you, you will be able to get it. I am super confident in that statement.
Well, as always, it was great talking to you today. If people want to hear more from you, where else can they find you around the internet?
So if you Google Patrick Hickey Jr., I am pretty much, like, I am Google verified. All of my stuff comes up. You can go on Instagram at Patrick Hickey Jr. You can go to patrickhickeyjr.com. You could go to Twitter at ReviewFixPat. You can go to Facebook at facebook.com/ Patrick Hickey Jr. So, yeah, I am open for anyone to find me. I love to talk to people. I'm totally actively looking to build the communities that I'm a part of, which is, like, video games, comic books, you know, theater, music. Like, if you came out with a dope album, I like it, I will post it in my stories on Instagram. I will ask to interview you for Review Fix, like, because that's the thing too. I mean, this whole thing with Condry started by me doing something that I've done for the past, like, 12 years, which is support the indie comics community. Like, this guy told me, like, I started a comic book company, would you want to interview me? And I was like, absolutely. So it's just, like, to me, it's kind of like karma, you know? I've spent, like, over a decade trying to help as many creative people grow as possible, and I've never asked anything in return, and I've always, like, promoted and handled myself, like, by myself. And in this situation, it was just kind of like destiny in a way, you know? They were looking for, like, really cool IPs, and I dropped mine on them, and they liked it, and now we're off and running, so I'm really excited.
As always, we will have links to all that stuff down in the show notes, because clicking links is so much easier than trying to remember how to spell things. And if you want to hear more from me, head on over to Twitter at PlayComicsCast, or head on over to PlayComics.com, where you can find links to all the social media stuff and places where you can support the show, like Patreon, where for $1 a month you can get these episodes as they're ready. Sorry for this one, it's kind of very late because it has been a long year this week. But normally they're up early. Or, you know, there's a stop where you can buy shirts and stuff, all kinds of cool things like that. Play Comics is part of the Gunna Geek Network, home to such wonderful shows as Better Podcasting, where you can learn how to have a better podcast and sometimes hear about paint drying. Just listen to the show, you'll figure it out. If you like the music that I'm rudely talking on top of right now, head on over to soundcloud.com/best-day to check out Best Day's music. But most of all, just grab a game, grab a stack of comics, especially if they're from a smaller publisher, and go find yourself a new favorite character.